Okay, so the Torah talks about Esav degrading or scorning the Bechorah. So is that the consequence of his sale or the reason for sale? Namely, is that just he decided to sell it because he was hungry, and by selling it for something so trivial, essentially devalued it, he mocked it? Or, as it sounds like from most of what you've shown him, the Torah is telling us that he had no appreciation for Bechorah in the first hand, and that's why he's willing to sell it. So it's not just the aftermath. By the way, he was hungry. He appreciated the Bechorah. He revered her. He was just too hungry for his own good. In the end, turns out he devalued the Bechorah by selling it for food. Or the reason he sold it is because from the get-go, he didn't have a sufficient appreciation. And if so, why? What can we learn about Esav? What can we learn about Bechorah from the fact that he didn't value it sufficiently? So it's a big machlokas between the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra. Ramban's position is that Esav, because he was a hunter, that's why the Torah begins the section with his profession, he was always living life on the edge. And he thought he wouldn't outlive his father, because hunters die. When you get killed, animals can trample you, other people can possibly kill you accidentally, as we saw earlier with Kayan, according to Rashi. So he thought, I'm not going to outlive Yitzchak. If I'm not going to outlive Yitzchak, then the Bechor is worthless to me, because the Bechor only kicks in when Yitzchak dies, but I'm going to die before Yitzchak. Okay? So why was that a mockery of the Bechor? It was a very pragmatic calculation. I'm not going to outlive my father. I'm a hunter. I've got a high-risk profession. I'm a mountain climber. I'm going to die early, so I just don't need the Bechor. I'd rather get a good plate of food right now. The answer is, the Ramban says, he was stuck in the present, in part because of his profession, in part because of his lack of long-term vision. He was just stuck thinking about the moment rather than casting his vision for long-term concerns. And once you're stuck in the moment, that leads to a lifestyle of food and drink and merriment and immediate happiness and immediate gratification, and Thanksgiving becomes Black Friday, and I gotta get another phone. Essentially, you lose all long-term vision, interest, and planning. So it's a bit of a tragedy. It wasn't as if he was so sinister, I'm not thinking long-term, because he was caught in a profession that clipped his ability to think long-term. But the problem is, most professions that we're going to be involved in soon here are going to challenge you that same way. Not that you're going to die early, chas v'shalom, because of your profession, but you're just so busy with your profession, and you're so immersed in it that it's hard to think beyond survival mode, beyond the immediate moment. What do I need to do to make it through the week? What do I need to do to make it through the year? Rather than saying, how do I want my life to unfold? What do I want it to be in 20 years? What do I want to be in 40 years? What will I be one day when my father passes? How will I continue his traditions? What role will I be? What role will I have? So Esav, in part because of his profession, he thought he died premature, in part because of his lack of long-term vision, which the profession causes, this leads to a degrading and devaluing of the Bechor. The inability to think long-term and to take into account values such as the Bechor, that's the degrading of life and degrading of vision that the Torah comes. So Esav is a Bechorah, as the Ramban says, ki ein chefetz baksilim, and here he's quoting a pasuk in Koheles, that silly people, you know what they do all day? They eat lentils. They're just interested in the immediate gratification, immediate satisfaction, rather than long-term concerns. They don't think about the next day. Okay, so that's an interesting Ramban. What was Esav's mockery of the Bechor? Fascinating question. Why doesn't Rivka ever tell Yitzchak the information she has? She went to Elohim. She went to some Shem Ve'Ever, according to Chazal. She davened to Hashem. But either way, in the beginning of Toldo, she has information that Virav Yavod Sa'ir, the older one, will be subservient to the younger one. Namely, the Yaakov is the chosen one. So she knows that Yaakov is the chosen one. Why doesn't she divulge this to Yitzchak? So essentially, the Ramban divides this into two chapters. She doesn't divulge this to Yitzchak initially, because Yitzchak doesn't know that she went to ask for this information. She went without his permission. Yitzchak isn't part of this Vatelech L'Doshes Elohim. So whether this was an act of disobedience, not bringing Yitzchak into the conversation, whether it was just, as Ramban calls it, tznius, that this is her personal project, or possibly the Ramban says she assumed that just like she had access to that information, Yitzchak is himself a Navi, so he'll also access the information, which is a really strange Ramban, because just talk to people, don't assume things. You're married to the person, for goodness sakes. Just say, I just had this nevuah today. I'm assuming you have better nevuah than me, but just in case, this is what I found out. I have a take, I have a news break. Yaakov will be the chosen one. So it is an interesting Ramban, and that speaks to a very fascinating tziv, maybe tomorrow we'll talk about it, that Yitzchak and Rivka did not have good communication. And within every marriage, communication is the core, learning to communicate with one another. But what's more interesting is, okay, so 30 years earlier, whatever, she doesn't tell Yitzchak this information. But why doesn't she say it now? Now that it's crunch time, now that it's money time, now that it's the fourth quarter, Yitzchak's about to deliver the brachas. Okay, so now, instead of rigging this whole system for Yaakov to receive the Bechor, just tell Yitzchak. So the answer is, Ramban says, that she just knew how much Yitzchak loved Esav. And despite all the information, at most, what Yitzchak would choose is, was just to say, you know what, I've got two different sources of information, Migo versus Cheskes Mamon. On the one hand, I love Esav, and I think he's the chosen one. On the other hand, my wife has told me this nevuah, this newsflash that she just told me, you know what Yitzchak would do, Rivka feared? Yitzchak would just leave it b'day shemayim. He'd just say, you know what, Kodesh Baruch Hu, you choose, Yechloku. You know, call the young bar. I can't make a decision here. On the one hand, my wife's delivering prophetic information. On the other hand, I love my child. She was afraid that Yitzchak would just leave it up to Hashem. So therefore, she had to rig it so that Yitzchak would actually give a bracha, b'pem malei. Which raises the question, now I'm speaking on the Ramban, why not? That sounds like a great idea. The only thing you want to avoid is for Esav to receive the Bechara. So if at best you can tell Yitzchak your information, and okay, he won't deliver the bracha to Yaakov, he'll just toss it up and throw it back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will deliver the bracha to Yaakov, we'll choose Yaakov. So instead of lying and or creating the system of deceit, just inform Yitzchak, create a standstill, Yitzchak will flip it back to Hashem, and Yaakov will be chosen and deliver the bracha. Why create this entire ruse so that Yitzchak will deliver bracha to Yaakov? And I think the answer is, as I told you last week, is you're now seeing the shift in human history from selection to free will. That even though Hashem creates a world of selection and a family of selection and prophetic information, Hashem wants people to make their own choice. So Hashem told Sarah, who told Avram, Ki bi Yitzchak yikar lechazara. So Hashem made the call. And now it's not Parshas Vayera, now it's Parshas Toldos. Now you have two children, not from different mothers, in which it's obvious who's the chosen one. You have two children that are not just from the same mother, but from the same womb, B'nei Sel Mimi Vitna. And they share the same genetic material. And they each have their choice, and so does Yitzchak have a choice. And Hashem wants people to make choice, even within a covenantal relationship where we've already bought in to our relationship with Hashem. Hashem wants human beings to make choices, and Rivka is part of that. Human beings have to determine the outcome, Parshas Toldos, and this is Rivka's trap. On the one hand, if she tells Yitzchak, Yitzchak won't buy it. At best, he'll just create a standstill, and then he'll abdicate the free will that Hashem wants this Parsha. It starts in Chayasara, where Yitzchak's wife is chosen by human free will, even though Hashem is choreographing everything in the background. But here, it's human beings that are making the decisions, and Yitzchak is so in love with Esav that he will not make that decision without Rivka creating subterfuge. So it's an interesting Ramban about how we're now at the stage of free will rather than kicking it back to Kodesh Baruch. Okay. The final Ramban is when he quotes Rashi. Rashi says that Yitzchak really started to suspect that this was not really Esav because he was mentioning Hashem's name so much. But wait a second. The Ramban asks on Rashi, if Yitzchak was really deceived and he thought that Esav was a tzaddik, then why would he think, oh, this must not be Esav because he's not mentioning Hashem, he's mentioning Hashem's name. If Esav was a tzaddik in Yitzchak's eyes, then Esav would also mention Hashem's name. So how did Yitzchak start to suspect that this wasn't really Esav because he was mentioning Hashem's name if he really believed that Esav was such a tzaddik? So Ramban says something amazing. No, Yitzchak still believed Esav was a tzaddik, but he said, you know what, Esav's probably not doesn't speak about God so much, the son of mine Esav. I'm blind, I don't really see him. But I know Esav doesn't really speak about Hashem so much. Probably Yitzchak reasons, because he's always with dead carcasses and dead bodies and hunting and in disgusting places. He's probably not mentioning HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name out of respect, not out of rebellion and apostasy. So Yitzchak was able to reconcile his misconceptions about Esav being a tzaddik with the fact that he didn't mention Hashem's name by attributing it to some greater piety that Esav probably had in his mind. And then when he heard Yaakov come in and mention Hashem's names, he knew this probably can't be Esav, my tzaddik son, because Esav just isn't used to mentioning Hashem's name because he's always careful. It's crazy, right? It's crazy for Yitzchak to start assuming that the reason Esav doesn't mention Hashem's name is because he's protecting the sanctity of Hashem's name rather than the fact that he's rebelling. The answer is, when you love someone, you trust them. And when you trust them, you even think of remote, seemingly unlikely scenarios to explain actions that are confusing or that are alarming or that are insulting. And relationships are built on trust, and relationships of love are built on trust. And if, let's say, Ellie all of a sudden goes spreading bad rumors about me, it's probably just, I know that he loves me, he's probably just, I don't know, wants me to get a tax break or something. And I'll think of some scenario, some narrative to explain behavior that seems a little bit errant. And that's why I keep saying, telling you, relationships are built on trust. You have to build trust from your standpoint, and you have to offer trust and afford trust to people even when they take actions. Don't run immediately to suspicion in relationships. Don't run immediately into vindictiveness. And if you trust someone and you love them, assume this is a little bit but certainly in relationships that you know people, trust their better intentions, trust their sincerity. And Yitzchak trusts Esav, and this is sadly because he's being deceived, because there is no relationship here. But you just see how deep love runs and should run. Yitzchak is already scripting some narrative to justify why Esav, in his mind, the pious one, doesn't mention Hashem's name, because he's busy with dead bodies all the time and trying to protect Hashem's name. When he hears Yaakov speaking Hashem's name, well, it must be my other son, because Esav would never mention Hashem's name so glibly, because it would insult HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. So three very fascinating remarks. One is that Esav was a hunter. He thought that Esav thought he'd die early. Since he thought he died prematurely, why do I need the Bechora? And he gets stuck in this living in the present without long-term vision or long-term thinking. And then, of course, when you're stuck in the present, it's about instant physical gratification rather than surrendering some of the instant for the long-term. Number two, Rivka is stuck. Initially, she can't tell Yitzchak because of her tzniyos. She can't tell Yitzchak because she assumes that Yitzchak also was a Navi. But at this point, money time, why doesn't she tell Yitzchak? Because she fears that Yitzchak will just toss it back to Hashem. I don't know. Rivka says one thing. My heart tells me another thing. Rivka knows that this bracha has to be delivered by human volition, not by a Kodesh Baruch Hu's divine selection. And therefore, she has to rig a system where Yitzchak will make a choice. Again, it's not a real choice, but it's a choice that Rivka's making through Yitzchak for Yaakov to receive the full-hearted bracha. And then finally, Yitzchak detects this must be Yaakov because this person is saying Hashem's name so often. Wait a second, maybe it's Esav. In your mind, Yitzchak, Esav's a tzaddik. Ramban said, according to Rashi's view. So Ramban says no. Yitzchak could still reconcile his vision of Esav as a tzaddik with the fact they never mention Hashem's name because he probably is protecting the dignity of Hashem's name. It shows how deep love runs and should run, and how deep trust should run, that you're able to create unlikely explanations for actions that seem a bit odd to you. Again, in this case, Esav's manipulating Yitzchak, but in theory, if there's an honest relationship of love and trust, you should be able to afford people generosity of spirit and assume their best intentions. Don't go immediately. Today we live in a world, I think, which we're immediately going to very hostile locations. People are hostile, people are angry. Don't assume the worst in people. Assume the best in people, especially people you get to know and trust. Okay? What I'm going to do is today for the boys in my